Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and today's guest, I'm very excited to be catching up with a good friend of mine. In fact, I've gone as far as to say, on many occasions, my nicest friend. I don't know if you're aware that I sometimes call you that, but that's often the disclaimer when I'm introducing him to people. I'm like, he's lovely. Everybody likes him. It only sometimes pisses me off. And...
Right, the feeling's mutual, don't you?
No, everyone does not like me. I will not tell you. I have many things that I'm not universally liked. So anyway, my wonderful friend Jack Appley, who is also a classical choral conductor, easily my most musical friend in an industry that fascinates me whilst I know nothing about it. So thank you for being the person I get to go to concerts with and be like, I can't give constructive feedback afterwards, but what I can do is be like, oh, I know this one. That's my claim to fame when I'm chatting to the other audience members. And he's important because he stands at the front. So I hope that's true. So with that all said, please welcome to your ears, Jack Appley.
Thank you, Bobby.
You're very welcome. It's quite surreal to record with friends at times, particularly when it's friends that I talk to as much as I talk to you, because sometimes if it's people I don't speak to as often, it ends up being like a sort of catch up. Like when I talk to Kyle Moore, a lot of that is on the air of our respective podcasts. And then when I catch up with people that I talk to loads, then I have to be like, okay, feel free to repeat any anecdotes you've ever told me, because I've probably had most of them. You certainly had to hear a lot of me talking about relationships.
It's shared. I mean, we both talk about our relationships with each other. I was just thinking, actually, it's coming up on our friendiversary, actually. We've probably known each other about 10 years this year, which is quite exciting.
God.
I know. All those relationships. Or not, or lack thereof.
Oh, mate. I mean, I'm learning just in this moment. I'm not the person that generally counts the time when I'm in a relationship. Seemingly I don't count it in friendships either, because that is a good amount of time. There have been a lot of relationships. I feel like you have had a lot of relationships. I have had relationships, and I have had even more not relationships. Is that fair?
I think that's very accurate.
You've had to hear about me fancying a lot of people and it crashing and burning, or people fancying me where it's not mutual and it's stressing me out, more than you've actually heard about me getting something together for any length of time.
It's very true. It's very, very true. And you've probably heard more about my, I'm in a new relationship, or, you know, I found somebody, this person's very, very nice, and this person's very, very special. And what I imagine, you know, you're very, very supportive at the time, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But I sometimes think, let's tune in again in about 3 months' time, Jack, and see where we are.
Well, I think in fairness to me, there's only ever been one that I took an instant to, and I don't remember her real name, but I just called her Victoria.
Yes. Yeah. She was quite scary. Quite scary. I look back now and we were not suited, but but you learn that though. And I think it's, as you go through life, I think it's the same with friendships, and I think it's the same with romantic relationships as well. All different types of relationships, whether it be work colleagues, best friends, you learn to spot from a greater distance who might be compatible and who is not compatible, and who you want to spend your time with and who you don't want to spend your time with. Now, don't get me wrong, we still make those mistakes. I mean, I'm still making those mistakes now, even relatively recently. There was somebody who came back into my life who I hadn't seen in almost 10 years, actually, believe it or not. And, you know, there was always a bit of chemistry there, and a few intimate things happened, but nothing substantial. And came back into my life again. And we met up for a drink and met up for the pub. And I was like, oh my goodness, this person seems to have really, really changed. Like, you know, they are far more comfortable, seemingly comfortable with themselves. And anyway, as the evening transpired, it was clearly obvious that actually they hadn't changed that much at all. Whereas by the end of the evening, I thought it was sort of one of those events where it was sort of a date, but it sort of wasn't a date as well. These unblurred lines, didn't really quite know what was going on. But it was clearly obvious by the end of the evening that this person had not really changed, had from the image and the memory I had of them nearly getting on for 10 years ago. Whereas I personally felt that I had changed, since I felt a little bit more secure with myself, whereas this person I felt was not. But who am I to say? Who are we to say whether somebody needs to go away and do some work on themselves?
No, you're right. I would never say that somebody needs to go ahead and work on themselves. But yeah, I know what you mean. I think that as well, when somebody has that kind of insecurity combined with the fact that you've not seen them for a long time, I find I react quite strongly to that, because then I feel self-conscious that I've changed a lot. And they're maybe looking at me through the lens of the person they knew many years ago. And I find that also quite uncomfortable, where I then feel weird in comparison to my old self. Not that I wasn't weird when I was young, just different versions.
Well, who we were. Yeah, exactly. I think we were all a little bit weird as we go about. It's funny because you're smiling at me, because not that you've told me to go and work on myself in quite so direct words, but we speak about things that come up in our lives, be it romantically or in life generally, and we explore those things together, which is one of the best things about our friendship. But, you know, we don't need to say the word that we need to work on things, but, you know, both of us separately and together have worked on some things in our lives that, you know, are of particular importance to us ourselves individually in that moment. And, you know, I think within a friendship circle, I, you know, love and respect you, and I would always take anything you said to me in any part of my life with a great deal of, I would listen to you. I would listen to you. Whereas if you turn around to me as a potential romantic partner and said, Jack, I think you need to go away and work on a few things, I think, you know, mind you, I say that, that has happened to me before, actually. It has happened to me. Yeah. somebody broke up with me and they turned around to me and they said, Jack, I think you need to work on a few things. I was like, oh, okay. What do you think I need to work on? I think you've got some commitment issues that you need to iron out. I was like, oh, okay. Interesting. Now, as we're being honest with each other, is there anything that you think you need to think about after our time together? And she was, no, I've got nothing to work on at all. I was like, Okay, well, I'm going to take that little nugget of truth and polish that. And
wow.
See you.
See you on the other side. I mean, that
see
is
you on the other side.
That is a red flag, surely, when they are really sure that you've got stuff to work on, but they've got nothing.
I didn't want to be the person to break it to them. Do you know what I mean? So
is we'll bleep this out or something, but is the person beginning with that we're talking about?
No. No.
Okay, interesting. Actually,
well, she has sort of... No. That wasn't who I was thinking of, actually. Somebody more recent than that.
Oh, you know what, Pete? Leave it in. There's a mystery. It's a mystery for me, the gamers, everyone. Okay, we'll find out about that later. For now, though, let's hear your dating story that we get all our guests to share. I don't really remember all the details of this one, so it'll be kind of new to me as well.
Well, goodness me, this is a funny story. So I first met this person in, I don't think you know this, so this will be new for you, in the McDonald's next to St. Paul's Cathedral. Have I ever told you this?
I did not know that part, no.
Yeah, no, I met this person in the McDonald's next to St. Paul's Cathedral. And I was just, you know, tucking into my Big Mac, you know, and this person walks in and we sort of locked eyes across a crowded McDonald's. And anyway, it was fine. And I meet a lot of people during my day-to-day anyway, so I wasn't expecting an interaction, a verbal interaction with this person. So I just got back to eating my fries and my Big Mac. Anyway, and then she came and sat down opposite. And we were having a chat, and she'd come down to London to look at a university, you know, for an interview or something like that. And anyway, we got chatting. And then she was finished with the rest of the day. I wasn't doing anything. So we ended up going for a walk around the centre of London for hours. This person I'd never met before in my entire life. And, you know, things felt very, very safe, very, very comfortable. And we were just having a chat and it was great. Anyway, we said goodbye at the end of the day, and that was that. And then you know, I wasn't expecting to see this person ever again. But we exchanged numbers and, you know, I wasn't expecting for a moment that we would see each other again.
Sorry, just to pause at that point then. What was the chat about exchanging numbers?
I think it was more the fact that we had such a lovely day just wandering around London.
Okay, so nothing explicitly was said about, like, what's next?
No, not at all. No. It's just a genuinely, beautifully innocent interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 to 9 months later, she came back down to London and then reached out. And we met up again. And there'd been, you know, at this point, there'd been some, over text, it had got, not necessarily heated, but there was some, I was like, okay, this seems like a potentially romantic endeavour, I don't know, activity. I don't know. I don't really know what the right word is, but potentially.
Look at me like I know how to describe meeting people
at
McDonald's.
I don't know how to describe it. At this point, I have absolutely no idea what to describe.
No one ever approaches me in public, unless they want directions or money.
Well, this is what I think. I look back at my younger self and I think, my goodness, what was I thinking? Like, my goodness, like, anyway, brave, I don't know, naive, who knows? And then we met up and it sort of became a date. It was clearly obvious that it became a date at that point. I can't remember exactly what we did, but at the time she was living up in Manchester. And what happened was essentially sort of like a long distance sort of, I wouldn't say, yeah, sort of relationship really. You know, I would sometimes go up to Manchester, she would sometimes come down to Birmingham, and things would happen, usually of a sexual nature. And we would also have lots of fun, and we would go out and do things and go to galleries, go to films. But it was clearly obvious that sex was an important part of this relationship. We were very, very compatible. And as we started having more and more sex over a period of time, about 6 months, 6 to 9 months, things became more and more adventurous in that department. There was a little bit more scratching, particularly of my arms and particularly of my back. And this was just something that she was very, very into and I was into. But things were starting to progress quite seriously in that department when one day things were happening and she was really, really going for my back. Really, really going for it. And I was like, okay, this is borderline not fun anymore. But it was still fun in a weird way. But it happened. We went to bed. We woke up the next day and turned up and looked at my bed sheets and it was, you know, there was blood all over the bed sheets and it was from my back. And I was like, oh my goodness, this needs to stop. This needs to stop. This is too far. So anyway, I then proceeded to call that relationship off, and she was not terribly happy about that. But I was like, this is I need to tap out. This is a bit much for me.
Yeah, we're losing too much blood here. And what was the reaction? So did you say that was one of the reasons why you were ending things?
Did yes, and I said that this is. Don't get me wrong. I'm into this kind of thing as much as anybody who is curious enough to be into it. But this is, I'm feeling uncomfortable now, and I don't, you know, this is not attractive anymore. I'm not getting anything from this anymore. And I think looking back, I could have handled that conversation better. All it needed was a check-in conversation to say, actually, this is a bit much. Mm-hmm. This is a bit much. I vaguely remember saying, that is a little bit much, no more than this, no more than that. But then that boundary was stepped. And it was only stepped up past once. And it was once too many for me, at which point I was like, red flag, I need to tap out of this. And I don't think she took it very well. But I don't know what's the message here. What's the don't meet anybody in a McDonald's and then I don't know what it is. Don't eat your Big Mac. I don't know what the lesson is.
Yeah, stop making seductive faces at women while you're eating your McDonald's.
Clearly, I know.
Stop fluttering those lashes of yours.
Indeed.
I don't know what the message is. I think it's understandable the way you handled things to me anyway, because it was very much like a relationship where you enjoyed spending time together. The physical element was a big part of it for both of you, but you were also kind of long distance, and it doesn't sound like there was any kind of working towards like it being more serious or wanting you moving or whatever. So there was a certain casualness to it. And then when that's the case, and also the sex life is a big part of it, a big driver of it, then if you're no longer enjoying that, then I think it makes sense. And would you have felt that comfortable? Because that's quite a lot. Like, I can understand being into certain things, but I personally think you need separate consent.
Yeah.
You know, I think when the first drop of blood comes, if not before, that is a consent point right there, because that is something further happening to your body beyond scratch marks. And yeah, that would...
I'm not into anything like that anymore, actually, with any of my sexual partners since then. Nothing like that comes onto the table or into the bedroom, or if you know.
You know what? Here's one. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I was once at a house party many years ago, and a girl I'd like got chatting to, I think she was like a friend of a friend, and there may have been some kissing, and I'm not really somebody that's out here doing stuff at other people's house parties, or indeed, I was like, I was about to say, or indeed my own, and then I was like, that's not accurate, let's not lie to the people. However, she threw me, because at one point she very much led me upstairs, and I think I just went along with her. I don't think I would have necessarily initiated that myself. And she asked me to cut her, and I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, like with a knife, I want you to cut me, I'm really into that. I know what I'm doing, I've done it before. And I was like, that makes one of us. And the thing that really tipped it was, I think I was just scrambling for excuses because I was so surprised by the situation and I didn't really know what to say. This is a fair few years ago now, that I think one of the excuses I used was, but it would be rude to borrow a knife from our friend. Oh, at which point she brought one out of her bag that she'd brought from home. And she was like, don't worry, it's clean. I only use it for this. I'm like, oh, the knife is only used for making you bleed. That makes me feel so much more comfortable. I think I would have felt better if you were like, no, this is just my bread knife from home.
Or worse, from the kitchen downstairs at the house party.
Oh, yeah, here's what I stole earlier.
Jesus, no.
Yeah, so well, people are into all sorts. I mean, but again... I think when it's blood, it's something else, because if, like, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure with your experience, you should have had a shower and there should have been some soap to make sure everything was clean. And
No, fortunately, none of my wounds, and they were wounds, you know, none of my wounds were, you know, septic or anything like that, or infected, and, you know, it was fine, but the experience was not great.
Yeah.
Not great.
Equally, I don't think my mate would have thanked me if we'd got her blood on their sheets, so.
I wouldn't dream of doing that to somebody else, you know. I wouldn't, why, you know, particularly somebody in that kind of casual context, as you said, you still need to be able to have those conversations at all points during journey of consent. You need to be able to have those conversations and check in with that person, because...
Yeah, otherwise, what are we doing? We're having a go on each other like that. Do you know what I mean? That's my, like, I think partly being a man, that's one of my fears of, like, I never want somebody else to feel like I'm just using them as some kind of stimulation for me. And I think, you know, that can particularly be the case when it comes to, like, a kink that one of you is particularly bringing in. Like, you need a willing participant who knows what they're getting into and what the potential, like, fallout is there. And that is not to kink shame at all, but part of exploring kink is consent. Like, that's a core part of that world.
Yeah.
This is not where I thought this chat was going.
No, neither did I. But it's funny because talking about it with you now, I think it's interesting how the relationship, for want of a better word, ended in contrast to how it began, which was actually a very, very innocent coming together of two people who just started talking to each other and went for a walk around London and took in the sights and went to a museum or a gallery or whatever. And it was very, very innocent. It was very much not that when it started, but then it ended like that. I think it's a shame personally, but, you know, we live and learn.
Yeah. And, you know, she lost the chance to really thoroughly bleed somebody on the regular potentially. So, you know, she'd really worked up to that.
Yes. Yeah.
What a time.
I look back at it now. I mean, it's a story, but I don't think, thinking back, I don't think it's a terribly funny story, but it was really not funny at all. It shouldn't be.
You're like every other comedian talking to me where they tell stories and then I ask genuine questions and then they're like, I don't know if it was as funny as I thought it was. I'm like, oh dear, did I make it too real?
Yeah, well, this is comedy, right? I mean, you know, you either laugh or cry. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, is that a success? If everyone's crying, it's like, well, at least we got an emotion out of them.
Oh, God.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So I think what we should do as well, given that I said you were often referred to as my nicest friend, I think you are potentially a safe person for me to ask what you think I'm like in relationships, having heard about a lot of it, and where you think I'm at in terms of are the stories getting any less ridiculous, having known me so long?
I like to think that both of our stories to each other are getting less ridiculous. And I like to think that we're both becoming more aware as we're getting older. That makes us sound terribly aged, I know. But I think getting older and having a greater awareness is something we could only aspire for, right? I mean,
you'd fucking hope. You're better that than it's going the wrong way.
Oh, God, yeah, I know. But that's why you need friends like, you know, you to tell you, you're going the wrong way, Jack. You're going the wrong way. You need to turn it round. Turn it round. Turn it round. Turn it round.
Turn it back.
But I think awareness and, well, if I'm allowed to say this, I think your self-respect is becoming, you now know what you are willing to tolerate and what you are not willing to tolerate in friendships and relationships actually as well. And I think that's such an important self-discovery lesson. And yeah. I think over the time I've known you, I've seen that element growing you. I don't like the word tolerate because it sounds like you're there under duress and you're putting up with things. But I don't know, can you think of a better way of describing it rather than tolerate, because that sounds so negative?
Aspire to,
yeah. Knowing what you aspire for in your own life and the kind of people that you aspire to surround yourself with in your life. I mean, I don't mean to blow my own trumpet here, but you've said to me on a number of times that you want to surround yourself with more people like the kind of relationship that you and I have, which is open, friendly and loving. And you've said to me when you've come out of previous relationships that, you know, Jack, you should be the new standard. You should be the new standard that I look for and set, like, the standard in a friendship. It's interesting. This is an interesting discussion, actually. The standards we have from our friends, why should they be any different from the standards that we look for in a relationship?
Yeah, well, I mean, the argument, if anything, is that the standards should be even higher for romantic partners because they potentially have access to more elements of your life and more ability to affect your self-esteem and your living situation and all sorts of things. And I think you're right that historically I've not been the best at holding certain standards, and I think I've had better standards for friends than I have for romantic partners. And
why do you think that is?
Oh, big question. I think it's a mixture of things. I think it would be a lot to unpick in one answer, but it's stuff like we can have different standards for different kind of dynamics, and maybe my self-esteem was lower when it came to romantic relationships. I thought I had less to offer, or I thought I had to like put up with more in order to be kept, and it was more important that I'm kept around. Whereas friendships, maybe I allowed for more ebb and flow and I drifted from people and didn't chase after them, perhaps. I also think we can be set up with quite unhealthy paradigms How often do you see a rom-com where, like, the favourite character of yours in the movie is actually the best friend, but they're not the plot? Do you know what I mean? They're the likeable companion that's there to, like, add humour and support and, you know, humanise the main character. They're not the romantic lead. And so often the romantic lead is the one that they've got drama with, or it seems like it'll never work, but they overcome the odds and somehow it does work. And, you know, there's all these weird Hollywood tropes where he's allowed to be, like, over a certain age, but she's not, and stuff like that. So I think we can be set up more in that way. And I think it takes a little while to admit maybe how much we can be influenced by that stuff. I think, yeah, I just think there's so many factors in that question. And even ourselves, we don't always know what we're looking for. You know, I never grew up being like, oh, I
more often not.
Yeah, I definitely want to get married, or I definitely want to have, like, this fixed type of relationship. I think I was very open, but that sometimes can lead you down not great paths. And it's funny what you said about things I've said to you, which are nice, because I have memory problems. So I can't remember all of them, but I'm going to take your word for it. That's a lot of nice things that he's reporting to the listeners here. So, yeah, I think what you're referencing there was I did have a relationship come to an end where it was kind of a vague and long-winded thing that had gone on for much of the time that we've known each other. And I knew that it had come to a point where it was a make or break, and it didn't seem like the make was ever going to happen. If anything, it seemed less likely than it used to. And I had grown in a lot of ways that this person hadn't, and we'd grown kind of apart. And so I went to have a chat with them, and I remember you saying, I'm a very proud friend. That's one thing I do remember.
Aww.
And that you said, like, you think I'm very
proud friend.
Well, I think it was
a very proud friend, and I think you are very brave. I think anybody who has to face difficult truths, particularly in friendships but also in relationships, is a very brave person, because, you know, telling people things that they don't want to hear is hard. It's hard. Whatever walk in life you're in, it's hard.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think you're a very brave friend. So,
thank you. And so, to finish up telling that anecdote, I think I'd stayed with you the week before, and I'd come back to Birmingham, where I was living at the time, and I knew that I needed to meet up with this person and have a conversation, and we probably weren't going to see each other after that. It was, you know, sort of a dynamic ending. We maybe didn't belong in each other's lives anymore. And I think what you're referencing is having talked to you after that happened, like, it was very direct, and you would have difficult conversations like that more so now than perhaps when you were younger, and be really honest about how you feel. But you wouldn't necessarily, like, be able to handle planning it out in the way I did, whereas I didn't see this person very often. So I sort of had to be like, okay, I'm going to catch up with them next month when they're next in the area. And so there was a lot of emotional build up to that happening. And then afterwards, I think because I had the comparison of staying with you for a week and you cooking for me most days and us having a really nice week together in London, then it was like, okay, well, this is actually quite a helpful comparison right now, while I'm feeling like shit and I may be a bit more liable to, like, rebound, to be like, remind yourself of the friends that you have and the bar that they can set, because you in a lot of ways bring a lot to a relationship.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think particularly with new relationships, we find ourselves, I think a lot of people, and I have been in the past, been one of these people who pours so much into that new relationship, pour so much. And you and I have spoken many, many times about actually enjoying and relishing that time for being single. We've spoken about that a lot. But the danger is, as soon as you get into a new relationship, is that you pour so, so much into that new relationship that actually you begin to neglect your friends and, you know, the things that, you know. It's funny, I can't remember where I picked it up from, but why do so many people go on big holidays? Why do they do that with their partners? Why are people more likely to do that with their romantic partners than they would their friends? I don't know.
Ooh. I think maybe a big part of it is you, like you say, you put so much into the dynamic. And also, I think perhaps there's this kind of paradigm sometimes that it's that person's job. Like there's certain things we think about, like, you know, where that can then go to extremes. So if somebody is the kind of person that has been known to abandon their friends when they're in a new relationship, I think that's because a lot of that is transferred. And sometimes I think even that can be a self-esteem thing, that you think like, oh, this person has agreed to put up with me and I put up with them. And so we do all these coupley things together. And so suddenly it can go, I think, too far where it's like everything becomes a them thing. You know, all your meals out, they're your person you do that with. Every time you want to see a film. And like I have one friend, Samara, who she watches all the Marvel films only with another mutual friend of ours. And I've always respected that because that's been one thing that has been solid the whole time, that she has always gone to see Marvel films with Coco. And sometimes that's been like, oh, could I not join? But it's their thing. And even if she's in, you know, and I don't think a relationship would change that. And so I don't know, I kind of like people having their things. And I think maybe part of the reason you bring this up is I've definitely been someone that's called you on being like, so I know you're in a new relationship, but we can still text, right? You can still reply to me.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. No, it's absolutely right. And you're right. There's this, the way I was thinking about it, just as you were speaking then, was there's a pressure to pump content into this relationship. This endless to fill it with things and memories and content. I think that's, and I have suffered from that in the past, as you're quite right to point out. And I think it's easily done, because if you're a recovering people pleaser like myself, then, you know, you want people to be happy. You know, you want your partner to be happy. And, you know, one way of doing that is by pumping content into the relationship. And, you know, sometimes it's too much, and actually you don't need to, you know, it's the forcibly pumping things in, which I think is the important bit, is, you know, just let it happen. You've got to be able to be brave enough and trust yourself to let things happen and step back and not feel under pressure to perform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't force the pumping. That's not
okay. Don't force the pumping. This conversation is taking on a particularly amusing light for me, because I recently watched The Full Monty. Okay. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh my goodness, The Full Monty. It's set in the early 90s in Sheffield, and it's about a group of five men of mixed backgrounds and ages. And one of them, and basically to raise money, they decide to strip for money. And one of them is getting close to the show date, and one of them's clearly feeling self-conscious about the size of his penis and buys a kit. And there's this brilliant scene when he's in the public call box with the kit in his hands, and he's on the phone to the helpline. He was like, nothing's getting bigger, and asking for advice, public call box. I don't know why I brought that up, but anyway, it sounded pumping, basically pumping to get his penis bigger. Maybe so. Well, you've got something on the brain. You've brought something onto the brain.
That's on you.
It is on me.
That's a word association I did not see coming. Sorry. Oh dear. All right, so. Whilst Jack figures out what his rule of the game is and seemingly goes through a lot of notes, which perhaps are all empty because he doesn't have one, I would like to contribute not forgetting about your friends when you get in a new relationship.
Oh, you pinched mine. That was going to be mine. Oh, Bobby, that was going to be mine.
All right, you have that one then, and I'll think of a different one.
No, I need an original one.
Okay. All right, so to elaborate on what seemingly is my rule after all, I'm surprised that's never come up on the show, but I think it's really important. And not only is it important in terms of maintaining the friendships, because I think particularly men can have a habit of putting so much of their emotional world into a relationship and that person being who they open up to about whatever they're stressed about, whatever their worries are. And then potentially if they're only opening up to that person, then they get out of the relationship and then can struggle to cope more with the fallout, because it's like, okay, well, who do I talk to about things now? And I've definitely seen that pattern in guy mates where they've like gone from relationship to relationship. And I think that can be, Jack's grinning, I wasn't going to call you out. I think that can be the reason why, partly sometimes, that you're like, okay, well, who do I talk to about this stuff? And you end up talking to a different girl at the pub and then she takes pity on you and suddenly you're with her. And I'm like, okay, interesting. So yeah, so that would be mine. Also, I think it's important for like codependency reasons as well. Like if all the things that you enjoy doing become things that you then only do with that person, then that can be getting into real codependency territory then. Because what happens if they go? What happens if they're unreliable? What happens if they need to take a holiday from you / you know, for work?
Well, at least they'd have an opportunity to go to, you know, San Francisco for a week with their friend and, you know,
yeah,
go on holiday with a friend rather than me.
Cool. Have you got a rule of the game?
I do have a rule of the game. My rule of the game is don't feel under pressure to pump content into the relationship. I think it's important that one tries to feel comfortable and brave enough with themselves, that they feel that they are enough, you are enough, just yourself, rather than actively pump experiences. It might be material goods like presents, might be money, could be anything. Just the relationship is between you and that person or any number of people to make it seemingly a more meaningful or full relationship. It's not required.
Yeah, and I think the kind of people that you would want to please, people pleaser or not, are the ones that will be there for you, as opposed to like what material gifts or endless like days out or whatever else are planned. You know, that can be great, but you don't want to be getting into a place of anxiety where you're like, I will not be kept unless I keep up this frantic effort all the time. Yeah, points right there. I also love the fact that you were like, no, I need to choose an original one, I can't just copy yours, and then included the phrase "you are enough," which I say at the end of every episode of my other podcast.
you're welcome.
I'm sure that was a perfectly knowing plug. All right, we will wrap up there and we'll be back for our bit behind the paywall for the Apple Podcast subscribers in a minute. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but we'll see what comes out when we're behind the paywall.
I'm having a ball. So let's just carry on.
Right. We're just never end. We'll just mic our regular conversations. So if people want to find you online, follow your work, I mean, you've got a website full of pictures of you, which I always love.
I've actually updated it only this week, actually, with all my dates, and I've updated my biography and stuff like that as well. So if people would, I've forgotten what it's called.
Is it not jackappley.co.uk?
I can't remember. It's jackappley.com.
Oh, fuck me. Okay.
Jackappley.com.
So people can go to jackappley.com for your upcoming dates to see you conduct choirs and also, yeah, see what you look like, because it's got a gallery. All right, let's end there. I mean, I love that I'm teasing you, like, my website, bobbytemps.com, isn't just half like modeling pictures that are way more pretentious.
It's all right.
Like, at least yours looks somewhat candid. Anyway, we will wrap up there. Thank you so much. This has been fun. You can thank me back or you can not.
Oh, sorry, I thought we went to the outro. It's been a pleasure. We should do it again sometime.
Cool. Might hold you to that.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.